Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com. Good morning to you. Hi, this is Patrick Timpone, and you've got OneRadioNetwork.com. It's a Thursday morning. It's a beautiful morning here in the Texas Hill Country. Wherever you are, I hope you're having some nice weather and a good morning. Tomorrow, Open Phone Friday. Open Phone Friday. If you'd like to be on the show today, on this Thursday, the 13th of October, you have a couple ways to do that. It is 888-663-6386 for your telephone number. If you're dialing from outside the country, you can dial 001-888-663-6386. And email is patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Next hour, we're going to talk with Dr. Paul Jamet. He co-authored a book called The Perfect Health Diet. Pretty interesting concepts here. He's actually was an astrophysicist, and he co-authored a book with his wife, who's got quite a background in medicine. So this will be fun. And this morning we're going to talk about mostly about the girls. However, of course, it does take two to make a baby. So the boys are invited too with Dr. Jeremy Calamarides. Did I get it right, Doc?
Calamarides.
Calamarides. Well, I was close. Calamarides. That's Greek, Dr. Calamarides?
That's correct.
And Dr. Calamarides is in Austin, newly in Austin. It's the Vitae Clinic, vitaeaustin.com. And Dr. Calamarides, he went to school in Erie, Pennsylvania, at Lake Erie College, where he's a doctor osteopathic doctor, right?
That's totally correct, yeah.
Which is a more natural form of medical doctor, I would suppose, huh? A bit more on the natural side than MDs?
We kind of started the holistic movement back in about 1879. The founder of osteopathic medicine really looked into all kinds of ways of treating people, not just surgery or traditional medicine, but he looked at other means to treat people, including a lot of really good work at looking at anatomy and how the body works, how it can heal itself, and he applied those principles basically to the human body, and it was a wonderful thing at the time. When we were kind of in the dark ages still in medicine. And it's a tradition now that still is getting more popular, and I think it's very helpful.
Yeah. So then you got involved with obstetrics and gynecology and your residency in Buffalo, New York, and then you spent 4 years at Pope Paul VI Institute, the study of human reproduction, in Omaha, Nebraska. And while 4 years there, that's doing research and working. That's amazing that there's that much research into this idea of having a baby that's been around since the beginning of time. That there's that much to learn with that, Dr. Calamarides.
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting new work over the past 30 years. There's been work done at the Pope Paul VI Institute up in Omaha, Nebraska, by Dr. Thomas Hilgers, and a lot of the exciting news about his research that he'd been doing for a long time is just getting out. We produced a complete medical text, and it also covers surgery, back in 2004, called The Medical and Surgical Practice of Napro Technology. And in that, there's a wealth of information about fertility cycles, in addition to menstrual cycles and irregularities. And basically, with this information, women can definitively know when they are fertile or when they are not fertile from day to day. And this is all based on the concept of what's called natural family planning, or more a more modern term is fertility care. And it's gone from just family planning, where you're just trying to achieve or to avoid pregnancy, to a whole health care maintenance system for women.
Huh. Oh, well, that's interesting. Boy, we have a lot to talk about. 6 minutes after 9 o'clock, Dr. Jeremy Calamaretes with the Vitae Clinic in Austin, or it's a VitaeAustin.com. So we generally think of a 28-day cycle, of course, in menstruation. And if I remember my math correctly, the woman is, say, generally fertile maybe on day, is it day 14 after the beginning of the period? Is that the kind of the broad strokes of it?
Well, that's a very much of a generalization. And really, the studies that kind of produced those numbers were done really back in the 50s.
Yeah, well, that's probably because I grew up with Catholic, what they did, the rhythm method, right?
That's right.
That's
now,
right.
And that's okay. You know, for a lot of women, about 13% of women actually ovulate on day 14, and about 20% of women have a 28-day cycle. But what's very important for women to know is, and men and women, when looking at fertility, they honestly just focus on, you know, when did you have your period? Mm-hmm. Because it's such an obvious sign. But, you know, there's this whole idea of tracking fertility and mucus cycles. And this is something that a woman can observe her fertility, basically, when she goes to use the bathroom very easily. And it's something that she can chart if she's trained in a certain way by trained professionals, of which there are three different kinds here in Austin. And around the country, there's many different versions of this kind of system of natural family planning. But there are basically some really good modern ones that I would advocate using. The thing is, with this idea of fertility cycles, women should know that you can't just say, I'm going to ovulate on day 14. In fact, from the time of menses to the time of ovulation varies for any given woman based on her nutrition, stress, exercise, all these things. And actually, from the time when she does ovulate finally to when she gets her next period, that is very specific for that one woman.
Okay. Oh, so you could start charting from the day of ovulation to the next period. That's more consistent?
Yes, it is.
Huh.
And this is the thing. So a woman who is actually charting this way and knows her fertility from day to day, and if she understands about how to identify exactly when she is ovulating, she can precisely predict when her period will come. And with that, she can prepare for that. You know, a lot of women suffer from terrible pains during their periods sometimes.
Sure.
And as a physician, I often recommend, you know, why don't you just start taking your Motrin the night before you're going to get your period? And, you know, that can be actually a life-changing event. One of my patients actually told me that once she started doing this, it practically eliminated the pain from her period. It was much better. She could, whereas she felt previously like she had to stay home from work, or, you know, sometimes women do stay home from school or from work because of debilitating pain, you know, it's much more manageable.
What's Motrin? Excuse me. Is that like an aspirin?
Motrin is like ibuprofen or Advil.
Oh, okay.
They're all the same medicine.
They're all the kind.
It's over the counter.
Yeah. And they're pretty safe for gals?
Yeah. Everybody should ask their doctor before starting a new medication, of course. But that's a very safe medicine in general.
Uh-huh. With Dr. Jeremy Calamaretes, and our telephone number, 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. So are you saying then, Doc, if she doesn't already know, and many, many women can just intuitively know when they're ovulating too, I've run across those in my lifetime.
So some people do kind of know there are other signs besides the cervical mucus that they observe when they use the bathroom, but they can see or they can feel sometimes what's called a Mitchell-Schmerz pain. That's a pain that usually occurs around the time of ovulation. There's things like...
Is that pain exactly?
Well, that pain could be from actually the moment of ovulation where a follicle that holds a very small egg about the size of a piece of sand, where the follicle, which is larger, it ruptures and allows the release of that egg. And then, of course, you know, soon after that, the fallopian tubes kind of gather up the egg and it makes a trip down to the uterus, where it may, along that journey, be fertilized or not. And basically, the other pain that they could experience is if that fluid, when that rupture occurs, enters the pelvis, you know, it might set off a little pain reaction. Sometimes blood touching the skin on the inside of a woman's body around her organs, like that can also sense some pain. When that blood spills, basically, and heals by itself, and it's a normal, natural process. But some women are a little more sensitive to that. It's not the best sign. Throughout history, there's been different signs of fertility, including changes in the woman's cervix, the opening to the womb, sometimes things like breast tenderness. In combination, you can monitor these things if you like with some of the methods, like one called the symptothermal method of natural family planning, or what's very popular in Austin is called the Couple-to-Couple League. It's an excellent method to avoid and achieve pregnancy.
Can you have you speak up a little bit?
Sure.
Okay.
That one's an excellent one to avoid and achieve pregnancy if a woman wants to with her spouse. And they actually mark down multiple recordings of or biophysical markers of their fertility from day to day.
Uh-huh.
And then they can tell really accurately when they are ovulating and when they have finished ovulating.
Uh-huh. And how long does the ovulation take, and how long, what's the period of real fertility?
That's a very good question, too. Excellent. When, you know, a woman's egg, once ovulation occurs, only probably lasts about 24 hours. But more recent studies show that the egg only lives about 12 to 16 hours.
Hmm.
And that's very fascinating because people are like, well,
how can you ever get pregnant,
right?
You know,
yeah.
In 12 hours?
Exactly. That's an amazing miracle. Well, actually, there's something else. Of course, there is the man's sperm, and the sperm are very susceptible to pH, you know, the acidity of the woman once the woman receives it, but they can actually survive in that cervical fluid, the cervical mucus. That is the key to fertility, and it's absolutely essential. So you have to have good sperm, good eggs, and you must have this cervical mucus.
So are you saying that if one makes love even before fertility, ovulation, then the sperm can be living in there?
That's correct. They can live between 3 to 5 days in good cervical mucus.
Really?
And what happens is they actually swim into the woman's cervix and just take up residence in what's called the cervical crypts. It's along the tract of the birth canal, but it's very low, and it just... they just wait there until very good cervical mucus comes, and then they know that ovulation is imminent, and they start swimming again. And you know, I say they know that, but they're ready to swim all the time. But when the excellent mucus comes, that's when they start swimming.
And that excellent mucus is the mucus that the woman sees as fertile kind of mucus.
Yeah, and she can see this on the outside of her body. Just simply wiping with a toilet tissue. It's not something that you have to go do a crazy investigation for. It's something that women who are taught this and about their fertility, they basically can do this every day, throughout the day, and it's they check before and after they go to the bathroom. And it's something that becomes a habit, and it's clean. It's not dirty. It's in fact extremely natural. It, you know, in our kind of distorted world, you know, we kind of not so into our bodies as much as people even think. I mean, here in Austin, people are very healthy in general. But I think that if people were just a little more open to the idea of monitoring their fertility and understanding it, it would be excellent.
It's 15 minutes after the hour. We broadcast worldwide on the Internet every morning, 9 to 11 o'clock, OneRadioNetwork.com and NaturalNewsRadio.com. And if you're a new listener to NaturalNewsRadio.com, welcome. We have an archive section on One Radio Network of over 1,300 shows on health, wealth, and well-being. And they're all there for you absolutely free. If you have a question for Dr. Jeremy Calamaretis, he is a OBGYN fertility specialist, and we're going to be talking about all things with the, having to do with babies and moms and periods and interesting things to keep ourselves more healthy in that regard and more knowledgeable. 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Back to the menstruation in general. Talk a little bit about the difference in time in between events, the cycle number, whether it be and how it's why it would skip around and why some ladies would be 30 days or is it a good sign? Let's start like this. Let me phrase it differently. Is it a sign of health or well-being if in fact a woman happens to be every 25 or 28 or 30 days, like, on the money? Does that mean anything?
I would say in general that probably means that they are pretty steady as far as their stress level and their normal, you know, things throughout the day. This is a very interesting subject, and sometimes, you know, I'd say most women tend to be extremely variable, actually, when they first start menstruating, when they're a young teen. You know, you shouldn't even expect regularity until about age 18 to 20.
Really?
And then beyond that, then we should have more regular cycles from there out. But, you know, some women, you know, might be on the shorter side, maybe more like 26 days. And some women might be even longer, more like 35 or 40. And there's nothing really wrong with that. When you get into long cycles that go to, you know, 2 months or 3 months, that's very long, and that is unusual. And there are certain medical conditions that can cause that. But the funny thing is sometimes when I'm looking at fertility in a patient's cycle and they're presenting it to me, sometimes a lot of my patients actually chart their fertility and do this thing called NAPRO tracking or natural procreative tracking, and they bring the chart to me, and we can actually go over their previous cycles of fertility and infertility. And with that, we can really identify, like, what is normal for them, and then also identify patterns where maybe something sprung up, like maybe a woman goes to her best friend's wedding. And honestly, that can very much affect that woman's cycle.
Oh, sure.
And the stress of that,
yeah.
Even though it kind of seems silly, will actually it'll pause the development of some very fertile mucus, possibly, and delay ovulation. And this is just fascinating. So
we certainly know, of course, how stress and worry and angst and even excitement and all kinds of things affect blood pressure and blood sugar and everything, right? I mean, it just does, Doc.
Yeah.
So it's no surprise that something as delicate and as beautiful as the whole ovulation process could be affected by stress. And just from a pure evolutionary standpoint, it really just makes sense, doesn't it?
It is sort of a safety mechanism.
Yeah.
You know, there's other times, too, where here in Austin we have some very fit people, and you know they are very healthy in general. A lot of women choose to do some very intense exercise, though, and they should be aware that, you know, this is very good for them in general, especially because it's good for their bones. They're usually extremely healthy nutritionally, but sometimes that intense exercise can disrupt their fertility as well, And if it is actually like imposing such a strain on or stress on that woman that they actually are not ovulating, that could put some risk to that woman for actually some bone loss and demineralization.
For not ovulating.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's the kind of person that, you know, they might want to see their healthcare provider and just make sure that they're doing all right, that they do have a level of estrogen that's healthy to keep their bone density up, and especially as a woman approaches a time where she may be going into the phase of menopause, that's where the woman really wants to be prepared and not have basically brittle bones.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. I want to go back to this idea that you're saying your experience, Dr. Calamaretti, that if you can pinpoint the day one of ovulation and then you track forward to the first day of the next period, that is oftentimes very stable, and that's clockwork kind of thing?
Yeah. In fact,
it's amazing.
Most women, the normal range is between 9 and 17 days for that period of time from ovulation to the woman's next menses. The average is about 13 days.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I have women come to me who have various troubles of their cycles, like maybe they're experiencing premenstrual syndrome, or they've got unusual bleeding going on, like brown bleeding, or sometimes even black, you know, maybe before their period starts for a couple days, or maybe their menses, instead of having like bright red bleeding and then kind of fading into pink, it kind of turns into this different stuff that they just don't like, they don't understand. And a lot of times that shows up on the charting where that phase is actually shortened quite a bit. And what it all shows is generally sometimes that there's a progesterone deficiency. And again, that could be because of either nutrition or stress that has been chronic on the woman. Or maybe there's actually an organic problem inside. Something like endometriosis can kind of play an effect on that also.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email from Heather. Not sure what city she lives in. She doesn't say, but can natural methods of family planning be effectively used to avoid pregnancy for long periods of time? And what can I learn about my previous miscarriage from charting my fertility?
Okay. Basically, that is definitely true, that you can use this method very, very effectively as any contraception to avoid pregnancy. But generally, couples who use this to achieve and avoid pregnancy, you know, they have a wonderful understanding that the couple comes to in understanding their fertility, because they understand that they have a really great power together. It's something that's very special. And generally, when couples are using this to avoid, and you can use it for, many, many years, you can use it to avoid pregnancy permanently if a couple wishes to. But generally, all the methods are taught in a way that's very open to life, because you have this understanding that, like, your fertility is something that is working correctly when you achieve a pregnancy. And if you simply avoid that time of fertility, you will not achieve a pregnancy. And it's actually a little bit, it's a sacrifice, because, you know, of course we always want to be together with our spouse. But if a couple has a serious reason to avoid pregnancy for a period of time, you know, they can do it very, very well. Likewise, if a couple has said, you know what, we have our family here, we want to stay healthy and take care of ourselves and respect that fertility, but you know what, we're going to maybe avoid the general contact during that fertile time. We can use other days. And generally, the fertile time for any given woman, you know, it might be about 7 days of the whole month, or it might be, maybe up to 20 days total. But that varies, and sometimes we can actually help women if they want to kind of decrease the amount of fertile days they see. Maybe they're having an abundance of that cervical mucus. That might actually point to a medical condition that if there's too much of it, and we can help out with that. or if there's too little also. You know, some women experience infertility because they just don't, they can never see this stuff. And we can actually help them increase the amount of cervical mucus they see very naturally. And it's usually very effective.
Here's an email. Leslie in Miami, thank you for talking about this subject. Wondering if Dr. Calamaretis can talk about herbs and natural substances or foods that would help regulate and make my periods more easy.
You know, that's a difficult subject. Sometimes some things you got to be careful with as far as herbs because they are real medicines. So I definitely ask your local doctor about this. But some of the phytoestrogens that we receive in our bodies through foods like soy and other things can actually have a detriment actually to our cycles.
Mm-hmm. They really do affect the cycles. Huh?
Yeah, so you have to be careful when altering your, you know, what's more important though is like good nutrition in general. You know, I think all women of childbearing age should be having some folic acid in their diet, and maybe probably taking a prenatal vitamin would be the best way to do that. And then the other way is basically having a really good normal full fat breakfast in the morning, and then
full fat.
Yeah, that means like basically, you know, I realize that some of our listeners might be vegetarians and things, but typically you can have butter and things. You don't have to have but you want to avoid the trans fats.
Sure.
You want to, have a healthy amount of fiber in your diet and protein at each meal, and limit portion size. I think generally when people are, if they're overeating, that can be a detriment to their fertility. Likewise, undereating, like I said before, too, that can be too much of a stress. So, in general, there's not an easy answer to, like, one herbal supplement that would help somebody. But in general, there are some vitamins that can increase fertility. We've known for some time that certain B vitamins can definitely increase that woman's cervical fluid. And a woman can get in touch with a doctor who's familiar with what's called fertility care and NAPRO technology by looking that up on the internet.
And spell that word, is it NAPRO?
NAPRO, yes. It's Natural Procreative Technology, or N-A-P-R-O technology, one word. And if you look up that, or the Fertility Care Centers of America is an excellent source for physicians who are familiar with natural family planning. And, a couple can go to them and then have a really extensive evaluation. And it's an excellent way, basically, to take care of themselves before they want to achieve a pregnancy, maybe get themselves really fit and right medically before they even achieve a pregnancy, therefore have the best chances of keeping that pregnancy, too. You know, Heather mentioned that about chances of having a miscarriage. In some cases where, again, that time period between ovulation and menses, if it's shortened up, that's a very clear sign that woman might be at risk for miscarriages. And it's very actually easy medically to cure. Basically, I utilize in my practice cooperative progesterone therapy, where I actually can give the natural hormone of progesterone at the right time that the woman needs it in her cycle to keep pregnancies going. And, we've had this technology actually for quite some time. It's just that a lot of doctors aren't trained specifically in that. But more and more doctors are being trained at places like the Pope Paul VI Institute, where we actually we hold a large conference every year, actually 2 weeks out of the year, and we have doctors from all over the world, but especially in the United States, come and learn about how to work with women's natural cycles of fertility, and then you know, treat all kinds of ailments cooperatively. You know, you don't have to turn off the cycle to make it work right. We can actually help it work better. And that's the amazing miracle of Napro technology.
We're talking with Dr. Jerry Calamaretis, and his website you can check out is vitaeaustin.com. But then these are some sources for you. As I know, we have people, of course, that's what we do, broadcast around the world. Napro Technology, N-A-P-R-O, Fertility Care Center. And you'll get some information there. If you have a question for Dr. Calamaretis, we have some time here this morning. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@1radionetwork.com. We're going to talk about the perfect health diet next hour with Paul Jammet. He co-authored a interesting book with his wife from Korea, who's got quite an interesting, fascinating background with Beth Israel Hospital, cancer, and Harvard. And Paul Jammet, PhD, coming up next hour. Regardless of what kind of diet you have, we think that doing some juicing on a regular basis is a really cool thing to do. It just is. And if you don't have a juicer, or if you would like to upgrade from your current juicer, we recommend the J. Cordish Power Grind Juicer. It's very low RPM, so the antioxidant oxidation level is lower because it's a slower speed. It's got this big, nice grinder that's circular, and it's a whole different technology than the more familiar Champion Juicer. So you can do soaked nuts for nut milk and also things like parsley and the real leafy greens very easily with this guy. And then, of course, the more easily done vegetables, the carrots, celery, cucumbers, and all that. Boy, they just zip right through. And the remnants out of the back are very, very dry. So you know you're getting a lot of the juice out. It's really a nice one, well-engineered. It's under $300, and it's going to last a very, very long time. So check this out. We receive a commission on these kinds of sales, and that's one of the ways we support OneRadioNetwork.com, along with your contributions, because our site is open to everyone worldwide, free, 24/7, and all of our live shows, of course. So there you have it, right on the front page. It's Jake Cordish's Power Grind Juicer in our store on One Radio Network, or on the front page, you say you see a picture there of Jay, who's been around the sun 88 times. He's looking pretty good, and he does live on juice. Jake Cordish, Power Grind Juicer, front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's health motivator Daniel Vitalis and the benefits of using a far infrared sauna.
Sweating is absolutely going to be one of the most critical things discerning people take on so that they can not only stay healthy, but actually so we can continue to have children that are healthy. We're going to need to sweat. People have sweat all through history. Before the world was toxic, they used that for their health. Now that it's toxic, it's one of the only ways we're going to cleanse our body fat. Our body fat is where we store so much of the environmental pollution. Not just the radioactive elements, we're talking about PCBs, we're talking about plastics, we're talking about a host of pesticides and herbicides, we're talking about heavy metals. Getting this stuff out of our bodies, we're going to need to sweat it out.
And a fast, easy, and affordable way to sweat is with a portable, relax, far infrared sauna. See all the information. Order with promo code ONERADIO on OneRadioNetwork.com, a relaxed, portable, far infrared sauna on OneRadioNetwork.com.
As you are enjoying this program, please consider the following. If the value of your money is based solely on the number of paper dollars in circulation, what does a massive increase in the supply of money mean to you? How does quantitative easing affect the value of your wealth? Will printing by central banks around the world change the nature of the buying power of your money? If this is all the case, what is an investor to do? USGoldCoins.com highly recommends that people diversify their wealth. Call us today and learn how you can acquire physical gold and silver coins to help divide your assets into a number of areas that will provide greater protection against an inevitable loss in buying power by the excessive printing of capital. If we can't control Washington, if we can't control the central banks, it is up to the individual investors to protect their own wealth. Do you have a sufficient amount of gold and silver coins? Please call us today, 1-800-878-2646, or log on the web at usgoldcoins.com.
After a rough day yesterday, the dollar is back up a little bit, so gold and silver are back down a bit. Gold is $1,861, down $14, and silver is down about 80 cents at $31.86. Nothing big happening. Crude oil is down a couple bucks. And as I said, the dollar is up, and there you have it.
Know the source.
The source.
OneRadioNetwork.com. Talk to Patrick now. 888-663-6386. Or email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Having a good time talking with Dr. Jerry Calamaretis. He happens to be in Austin, Texas. And he's a doctor of osteopathic medicine at Lake Erie College, then did the OBGYN thing, and then 4 years at Pope Paul VI Institute for Study of Human Reproduction, Omaha, Nebraska. And he now lives in the Austin area, about an hour from where I sit. But wherever you are, I'm sure that's a good source, Dr. Calamaretis, that I gave, you think, or if people around the world and the country can check out NAP, what is that, NAPRO Technology?
Yeah, it's www.naprotechnology.com. It's an excellent source of information.
NAPRO Technology.
NAPROtechnology.com. So, yeah, we have, we're really very lucky to be here in Austin. It's a great city. We have, throughout Texas, though, there are other providers like myself who are, you know, using this information in their practices. We have one down in San Antonio. There's one in College Station. There are family practice doctors around the Dallas area who use it. And we actually see in Austin quite a number of patients from Houston and even all the way as far north as Dallas.
So these would be couples that come in want to get pregnant a lot of the times?
Yeah. Sometimes they're having difficulty. Sometimes they've been through different fertility clinics and they're having trouble. Maybe they are having difficulty with some of the stress or some of the ethics that they're kind of imposed on them, basically, on going through some of those treatments. And, you know...
the more aggressive fertility treatments.
Yeah, it can be very hard on the couple. And what I like to do when I'm taking care of a couple regarding fertility is really look at what is the underlying cause of their fertility.
Can you find out? Is there a way to know?
Yeah, you know, through really good studies, especially looking at this kind of charting as a baseline is actually a wonderful way to start. Then, you know, often if we correct some of the abnormalities that appear in the charting, maybe it's irregular bleeding or, you know, maybe there's a certain part of their cycle, like we were talking about irregularities of that luteal phase or the time from ovulation to menstruation,
right,
that comes up, or maybe it's a disparity of mucus, maybe it's certain pain at certain times or different kinds of bleeding at certain times in the cycle, whether it's very heavy bleeding during menses or maybe it's spotting in between. You know, it shows different kinds of pathology. And what I can do then is sort out, okay, what is an organic problem that's going to require maybe a procedure or maybe a surgery to take care of? And really, you know, a major part of that is actually doing a laparoscopy. You know, a lot of, unfortunately, I think a lot of my associates have reduced the amount of laparoscopies they do where they're just not even asking the question, you know, is there something else in there going on? But if we look in there, you know, inside the woman's body and her pelvis, we can actually identify some real physical barriers to a couple's fertility. Sometimes there's actually something that needs to be taken care of just because that woman is suffering, maybe with pain, maybe it's endometriosis, maybe she has a different kind of physiology because she has polycystic ovaries. Basically, some of these need to be sorted out surgically, and then you go on and you move on to medicinal treatments and possibly some hormonal treatments.
Mm-hmm.
And we also take a very good look at the man. And, you know, there are ways to treat male infertility in association with a good urologist. That's what we do. So we get to the heart of the matter. We try to give answers, and couples will be very satisfied with knowing, you know, now I know my diagnosis. I just wasn't ever told that before.
Yeah.
And
what are some of the chief reasons you've come across for the male infertility?
You know, nationwide, I'd say that there's a lot of men who have reduced numbers of sperm. So,
we've heard that. Is it really as rampant as we hear, Doc? Is we hear numbers all the time about how the sperm count is going down and all that? Is it true?
I think so. In general, there has been a decline over the years, and I'm not sure exactly what the cause of that. I think it's multivariable. That means that it could be our diets. It could be the amount of stress we're going through
mm-hmm.
as men. You know, actually, there's a lot of stress on men nowadays. There's a lot of things as far as there's a lot of relationship issues that go on too that can also, you know, have a bearing on fertility. Actually, I think my specialty is really taking care of the women. I think that there are things there that we can improve upon. Definitely diet. You know, sometimes there's real medical issues. Sometimes there's some kind of organic issue. Maybe the man has a problem where his sperm are just too warm, or there's an infection that's been going on. And those need to be really looked at carefully. And honestly, in one third of the cases of infertility, there's a male factor.
One third or so.
At least, yeah.
Here's an email from Brady in Madison, Wisconsin. Can the doctor offer any advice or suggestions on relieving stress? My wife's cycles are affected greatly by stress, sometimes delaying her cycle up to 4 weeks. Most of the stress in her life are due to family issues, deaths, illnesses. Overall, she's very active and healthy, 27 years old. Well, appreciate your ideas.
Yeah, I think that stress really does affect the cycle. You know, different ways to reduce it is, you know, a regular exercise program. If a woman's open to that and can fit it into her lifestyle, that can greatly help. Sometimes couples need to go to therapy, honestly, though. And that can be helpful also. You want to get someone who's going to be very supportive to you, because your goal is to be together. You know, you don't want someone who's going to break you apart. You want also, you know, I think a good spiritual life is important.
Sure.
And that's a natural thing. Women need, they have very special needs. you know, as far as just feeling well, you know, I think that men in general need to do a much better job. And, we all have to be so supportive to our wives, because they're generally the lots of times keeping the family together. And what we have to do is be able to spend time with our spouses, you know, take time to be together and really just spend time. You know, it's so important. I think that's what women often want from their husbands.
Yeah, just to be together.
Yeah, you know, to be together. At the same time, really good time. You know, get away from work from time to time. Do things where you're planning on not just especially for a couple who's actually trying to achieve a pregnancy. You've got to focus on something called spice, and that involves the spiritual, the psychological, the physical, intellectual, communicative, and emotional aspects of your relationship that are so important. And I think that's so that SPICE acronym really fits, and it's really needed in our society more than ever.
Yeah, and I bet you it's more and more difficult with both mom and dad working these days, Doc.
Yeah.
I'm sure you come across it all the time.
No. Our economy now, it's very hard, you know, it necessitates that sometimes we both be working. But, you know, when we get home, to try to focus on each other is the way to go.
Hmm. You have something else you want to say?
I would just say, you know, sometimes some women do need, you know, some medicinal support for their stress too, and you know they shouldn't be afraid to approach their physicians about that because sometimes it can be extremely helpful.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email from LG in Erie, Pennsylvania. What are the downsides and risks of using birth control pills?
Okay, basically, there's at my own office, I follow what's called the ethical and religious directives for Catholic healthcare, and this is kind of interesting. My office was set up specifically in mind for people who, you know, they didn't want to be using contraception.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
So we wanted to really, and also we wanted to be always supporting life here. In regards to the downsides to the pill and other contraceptives, you know, I think that the main thing is you're basically kind of, for me, when I was, this is where it hit me all. It really hit me. I was actually in an anatomy and physiology class in my, I think it was senior year in college, and I was just starting to date my wife,
mm-hmm.
and I recognized, you know what, her body is awesome, and I was doing a really cool talk on the control of the menstrual cycle, and I thought, you know, I just think that she is the most beautiful creature ever, and I really respect her. And I didn't understand when I had a partner in my talk who was talking about contraception and how that works. And in my talk, I talked about how all these beautiful feedback loops of the hormones and this wonderful relationship that allowed the menstrual cycle to occur, the fertility to come and go. And then my friend, who I deeply respected, you know, showed how basically contraception basically blocked these processes from working and actually caused a perfectly functioning system to go into dysfunction. And I just thought, you know, I don't understand how, I personally don't want to place that kind of burden on my wife in the future. And I'm not sure I didn't know what we were going to use to avoid pregnancy temporarily. I knew we wanted to have a family soon in the future, but that, you know, she had to get through some schooling. But I didn't want to be placing that burden on her of turning off her body that worked well. And as I looked into things, we found out about this thing called natural family planning. And at first I was very skeptical. You know, could a woman, you know, chart her fertility day to day? And is that really accurate? Well, at a point when we actually went to the class and they showed us excellent slides that actually I wish I had in that reproductive, that anatomy class that I had. If I showed those slides, I think I would have shown everybody that there is a way that couples can very effectively avoid and achieve pregnancy. And it's really good. So there's that. I think it's just, in general, that's kind of like natural law. You know, it's only the only part of medicine where we're actually like turning off something that is actually working correctly for our own means.
Oh, that's interesting. Interesting way to look at it.
Yeah. And So I just thought that was strange. Now, on the other hand, you know, a lot of the medicines that we use to, as far as contraception go, they actually can cause a temporary sterilization, honestly. I mean, like if you take a Depo-Provera shot, you're not going to be having any cycling going on for at least 3 months. But for some women, that can have a longer term effect, and you know it's something to consider. It's not necessarily reversible. Most of the time, when people come off the oral contraception, their cycles return to normal. But it does take some time, and we do see effects of that. When women are on it for long periods of time, they're kind of playing Russian roulette, I think, in some ways, because, you know, if they are taking it for a medicinal reason, like, oh, I'm taking it because my acne's bad, which, you know, it does clear up acne. But if you take it for that for many years and you kind of ignore your fertility and maybe you use it throughout, you know, your early part of your marriage, and then finally you're like, you know what, we're finally ready to have kids, and then you just say, well, we're going to stop taking the pill. Okay. Do you honestly expect your fertility to be 100% right after that? I don't think that people, you know, are given completely informed consent about it. You know, it might be covering up something that is underlying, like, wrong. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, that might be a detriment. Like, if a woman is taking oral contraception and they say they're taking it for painful periods, and it may help out somewhat. But, you know, if the underlying problem is really endometriosis, then that would be a shame to let that go on for years and years and years, where the pill actually doesn't treat it at all. It just kind of covers up some symptoms.
Yeah.
And then they have, later they find out, you know what, we can't even achieve pregnancy because the endometriosis has literally wrecked the insides. The fallopian tubes are destroyed. That's really a shame. That is really a surgical disease.
Uh-huh.
And should be treated like such.
Mary wants to know if you'll go a little bit more detail about the whole mucus idea. She has a long email. I'm just paraphrasing. And then if there's any books that you can recommend so she can learn how to do this birth control naturally.
Okay. Well, basically, as far as the cervical mucus goes, I really emphasize that people should go to, I mean, there are many books online. For many years, there's some very popular ones, like there's the Billings method,
right.
Which is the Billings ovulation method, started by Dr. Evelyn and John Billings. John has passed away now, but they're from Australia. That method is worldwide. You can look at that on the internet, too. If you look up Billings method, there's a great website, woomb.org. I think they have almost every language on that website, too. It's an introduction. The other one is John Kipley's book has been tremendously popular, The Art of Natural Family Planning in the past.
The Art of Natural Family?
Yeah, and that's another introduction. But you know what? Really, the way to go, and this is that I cannot emphasize enough, is that you should contact the actual providers of the method, that is the teachers locally. There's another resource called onemoresoul.com.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, they have a wonderful list all around the country of different teachers of all different methods and doctors, even in different specialties, who are familiar with this information. And you should really go through a class where you're trained by real people, because then you can ask questions. I have a great friend who helped me get started in all this, and he started teaching it through the computer alone. And there's really no couple to ask. And, you know, it was great as far as instruction, because for somebody who is very remote, they can learn very rapidly. And they have some tests on there, and they can test their knowledge. But when it comes down to it, if the couple has a problem, they still need to ask somebody, you know, what does this mean? Or where do I go for more information? And having a real teacher and going through a class is the way to go. So, like, locally in our town in Austin, we have the Billings ovulation method, we have the couple-to-couple league, and we have what's called the Creighton Model Fertility Care System. I would also say that nationally there's the Family of the Americas is an excellent group. Those are really the modern methods of NFP that I really advocate using. And I would say look that up. Those are the ones to go to. Go through the entire class. There's a first introductory session usually where you learn about what is this? How do you look for the mucus or the other physiological signs of fertility? And then how to chart it, basically. But really what you have to do is complete a course over several weeks to understand your fertility the best. Because as you chart, you learn, you see the things that you've learned about, And sometimes, you know, these people have great experience. When things come up and you have questions, then you can ask your teacher, get those answered, and feel really confident in the system. And that's the best way to go. It's amazing. Lots of people come to me and they've learned from a book only, and sometimes they have a good resource, but they're missing parts here and there, and then they find the method either less effective to achieve pregnancy or to avoid. And we really want them to get the fullness of whatever method they're doing.
Mm-hmm. I kind of get the feeling, this has been my experience, but I wonder if you agree, that this relationship, the key relationship between the man and the woman, is just everything when it comes to this. I mean, it's so important, isn't it, Doc? I mean, this to really have the love and respect and the patience with each other, I think things are going to work so much better.
Yeah, it really
isn't it?
This is a system that is definitely for spouses who are interested in each other, and I think most couples are interested in each other.
Yeah.
So if they're willing to be open to that, you know, when you use this method, you're going to be entering into greater communication with your spouse. You know, it's been said that couples using these methods to achieve or avoid pregnancy, simply they stay together better. There's about a 4 or 5% divorce rate among these couples, compared to a 50% divorce
really?
Rate among regular married couples. So that's something to be really proud of. It's amazing. I just want to emphasize about the websites where people can go to get information. You can go to also, besides naprotechnology.com, and you can also go to www.cclii, that's couple-to-couple league international.org, and also fertilitycare.org website. And that's spelled FERTILITYCARE, one word, .org.
Okay, and we're going to get these all on the show page here, so people can have some, just a nice little list of clickable places they can go to nose around. And so since we had this recorded, we'll be able to get these all down. And
that's great, Patrick.
And then I guess if they just Google Napro Technology too, they're going to be able to find some things there too, huh?
I think they will, and they'll probably point at each other. Sources of information they can go to find out where they can go locally to get help if they need to. And, you know, if they can also call the Pope Paul VI Institute sometimes if they need to get information about where they can go more locally. They have resources about where things are around the country.
Oh, that's in Omaha. That's where you worked and studied for 4 years.
Yeah, that was really it was excellent. It was actually before medical school. I actually had written to the Billings in Australia, and I said, you know, we can come do some research for you. And I wrote to a wonderful doctor in Umeå, Sweden, who was doing biophysics on cervical mucus. And they all said, you need to go work with Dr. Hilders in Omaha, Nebraska. And I kept writing to different doctors around the country, and they all said the same thing.
Go
Dr.
work
Hilders
for him.
needs your help. Please contact him. And it was just, it just so happened that's where we went, and it was wonderful.
That's amazing that they've got all this research just on one aspect, just like the mucus. Isn't that just interesting?
It is
fascinating, isn't it? Well, you might as well look deeply into things so you really know, try to figure out what's going on in this wonderful bodies of ours. Well, Dr. Callum Reddy's, thanks so much for spending some time with us. It's been real helpful. You're a nice fellow, and I'm sure Austin, Texas is very pleased to have you there. How long have you been in the Austin area?
We've been open actually almost a year now. October 18th last year.
Oh, that's great.
That's when we opened. So thank you so much for having me on.
Oh yeah, it's a pleasure. I heard you on an Austin station. I work on KLBJ. I do a show on the weekends, and I heard you there, and I just thought you sounded great, and thought we would take you out there and introduce you to the world here. So now you're going to be a big rock star. So watch out. All right, Doc. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. You guys take care, okay?
Okay, been a pleasure. Dr. Jeremy Calamaretti's a nice fellow, huh? And his website, vitaeaustin.com. And you have a lot of information there. And for you gals and boys, you want to get pregnant or not. I hope you found that useful. I did. It's almost 10 o'clock here. We're going to talk about the perfect health diet with Paul Jammet coming up. Daniel Vitalis, let's play a game. On a desert island, you can only pick one food. Just one. Just only one.
If I had to live off of one food, I think it would be, if I had any choice, it'd probably be colostrum. It's the most complete food that I know of. And the thing about colostrum is the first food for any mammal. So it's kind of a no-brainer that colostrum contains all essential fats, it contains all essential amino acids, it contains all essential glyconutrients, which are carbohydrates. It basically contains every substance that we need to maintain our bodies. The first milking you get from a cow after the cow calves is called colostrum. Every milking thereafter is called transitional milk. And what it is it's part colostrum and part milk. So that's something that can happen in the industry because people will sell you the transitional milk and call it colostrum. We're very careful not to do that. We only use the first milking of the animals.
Pure colostrum from SirThrival. They take the moisture out. That's it. To order, click on the picture of colostrum, front page, OneRadioNetwork.com.
Here at USGoldCoins.com, we hear from many investors with concerns about what's happening in the U.S. economy. But there are some bright spots, and we encourage investors to look for areas where they would do well. In investing these days, we certainly would recommend one consider gold and silver coins. If you call us at 1-800-878-2646, usgoldcoins.com has free information to help find some bright spots in an otherwise dark economy. We hope that you'll give us a call. We know we can help. Call us at 1-800-878-2646 for a free CD on how to properly acquire gold and silver American coins. It's a great hedge against economic problems, a wonderful vehicle for investing. We hope to hear from you soon. 1-800-878-2646, usgoldcoins.com.
And we're going to talk about the perfect health diet in just 60 seconds. Stay right there. And if you'd like to be on the air with Paul Jammet and talk about your diet, it is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Also broadcasting live on NaturalNewsRadio.com. Quick word about something that I did last night for about 30 minutes or so, and that was sit in my super cool calibritualistic expialidocious relaxed far infrared sauna that we are offering on OneRadioNetwork.com. Now, this is a portable sauna, so they're quite a bit more affordable than these wooden guys, and the wooden ones are fine, but you do pay a lot for the wood. And there is quite a bit of research that says that I think that this one that we're offering is even better. It's more effective just because of the technology. And you can learn more about that by going to our website, clicking on the sauna ad, either on the front page or in the store. And then you have a page there that's just loaded with information with all kinds of hot links as opposed to cold links. And then you'll be able to mix and match and do some research and see if this doesn't strike your fancy. If you put the One Radio code in there, One Radio, you'll receive it for $935 delivered via FedEx. And it's portable, but it's very well constructed. So don't think just because it's portable that, oh man, I could be worth $900. Well, where do you get it? It's really well constructed, but you can actually take it down yourself and move it from room to room. And boy, you sweat. I did last night for about 25 minutes, and you cannot believe the sweat that just pours off you. And we don't know a lot, but we know that detoxification, the best way to do it is through the skin. Of course, there's other ways that we know, colon and kidney and such, but through the skin is the safest, most effective, because you don't have to worry about it if your kidney's strong enough and then the rest of it. So we do all of it. And through the skin is an amazing way to get rid of things, heavy metals and all kinds of toxins. This is cool. Check it out. Front page, OneRadioNetwork.com.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Talk to Patrick now, 888-663-6386, or email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
All righty, hour number two, open phone Friday. We're going to have a good time tomorrow. We've got lots of things we're going to talk about. Oh, we've all would like to find the very perfect health diet, wouldn't we? I've been looking for 30 years, and I'm still working on it. On the line is Paul Jammet. He's a PhD that he co-authored a book with his wife, Xu. Let's see if I get this. Xu Qing. Is that correct, Paul Jammet?
Xu Qing.
Well, I was close.
Yep, close.
How are you, Mr. Jammet?
Very good.
You found the perfect diet?
Pretty close, we think, yes.
Does it involve pizza and ice cream? Otherwise, I don't want to play. I'm just kidding.
Well, it can, but you have to make them yourself because, unfortunately, the ingredients in most commercial pizza and ice cream isn't that good.
Uh-huh. Your wife, Xu Qing, molecular biologist, cancer researcher, Beth Israel, Harvard Medical. And your background's an astrophysicist and researcher in economics. How'd you get to that world of health?
Well, the way a lot of people get to it, we had some health problems ourselves. And
your wife?
Yes, both of us did. And we found that doctors weren't helping us, and we kept getting worse.
I'm shocked.
It's hard to believe, I know.
Uh-huh.
So I had a chronic illness that resembled multiple sclerosis.
Really?
Developing neuropathy, I would drop things, bump into things. My reaction times were very slow. I was losing my memory. Lost all my happiness.
My goodness. How long ago, Paul?
Well, it started in the early 1990s, but it was mild for a very long time. It just very slowly got worse. By about 2005, it was starting to get disabling, prevent me from being productive at work.
My goodness.
So I decided I had to focus on health.
My goodness. So did you ever get to the root cause of that problem?
Yes, I did.
Did you?
It turned out fixing my diet improved a lot of things, but it also really helped me diagnose the remaining things that were going on. It turns out my cognitive and neuropathic issues were due to a bacterial infection in the brain, and it was treatable with antibiotics. And I also had a systemic fungal infection, which was treatable. So diet helped me tremendously, and then antimicrobial medicines took me the rest of the way.
How did you come to the point, Paul Jammet, where you found out it was bacterial in the brain and fungal?
Well,
are you talking fungal over a candida overgrowth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. How did you come to that conclusion? That's interesting.
Well, the bacterial symptoms. As I said, once I fixed up my diet, many aspects of my health improved tremendously, and all of the other symptoms clarified. So they became very, very clear. And I just spent a lot of time browsing the web looking for clues, and I happened to notice that the symptoms I had were essentially the same as the cognitive symptoms of hypoglycemia, which is a common condition in diabetes and some other conditions. And they're also very similar to the symptoms of serotonin deficiency. And I tested my blood sugar, and my blood sugar is normal. So I was thinking, what can produce hypoglycemia in the brain but not in the blood?
Mm-hmm.
That led me to the idea of a bacterial infection, because bacteria consume glucose. I happened to search on that idea. I found a site called cpnhelp.org, which is help to chronic disease patients infected with Chlamydophila pneumoniae, and my symptoms almost exactly match those of a lot of people there. And so I said, well, I should try the antibiotic protocol that has been proven for this condition, and it worked. And it was obvious that it was working the first day, because You know, like I said, I had lost all my happiness. I was euphoric on the first day. So
my goodness, So let's see. That's interesting. So your symptoms were kind of hypoglycemic, Paul. But you, your blood sugar, if you tested in the morning, it was okay.
Yeah, my blood sugar was normal throughout the day. So
yeah, right.
I had normal blood regulation, but my neurons weren't getting enough nutrients. So they were a little starved.
And what was the symptoms of that?
Well, the biggest symptoms are mood is affected.
Mm-hmm.
Decision making, it's hard to be decisive.
Mm-hmm.
Memory loss. Probably mood, you know, leading to irritability. It tends to be more irritability in men, anxiety in women, but a lot of overlap.
I'll be done. And so you used an antibiotic, and it just croaked this bacteria.
Yeah, but, you know, I think if my diet hadn't been improved first, I don't think the antibiotics would have worked nearly as well.
Yeah.
And, in fact, it was a long course of antibiotics that probably started the disease rolling in the first place.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It's interesting that you ended up having to use them. But I think there's sometimes, as much as we don't promote drugs here, that sometimes antibiotics are called for in certain cases.
Yeah, definitely. It's
could save your life sometimes.
Yeah, I think, you know, microbes, I would say bad diet and infections are the leading causes of disease. And sometimes you need to address both of those causes.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you just address diet, your immune system will address the others.
We're talking with Paul Jammet. He's a PhD. You're a PhD in astrophysicist?
That's right.
Yeah.
Physics.
And then also, he co-authored this book, Perfect Health Diet, with his wife, Xu Qing, who molecular biologist, cancer researcher. Let's invite the folks in. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Broadcasting live on naturalnewsradio.com and oneradionetwork.com. So kind of lay out the broad strokes what the perfect health diet is about. I know it's a hybrid of some different things, but it's, I guess it's more of a paleo kind of a diet, Paleolithic?
Yeah.
In that range?
Right. I would class our diet as a paleo diet.
And tell folks what that is.
Well, the paleo diet, the inspiration for that, so there's so much confusion about diet. And when you look in the medical literature, there's over 2 million papers. A lot of them conflict. It's very hard to, you know, make sense out of everything. And the paleo movement is based on the idea we should look to evolution and our evolutionary diet for clues as to what's the best way for us to eat. And if we eat the way that Paleolithic peoples, hunter-gatherers, were eating, then we'll probably do well. So if you shop around the edges of the supermarket and get things that were recently plants and animals and haven't been modified too much, then you'll probably be doing pretty
have
well.
Have recently been plants and animals. I like the way you say that. You used to be a cow.
That's right. Yep. And anyhow, so our diet, so we sort of started from that evolutionary perspective, but with a little bit broader evolutionary perspective. So we look at other sources of clues about what evolution selected for, like the composition of breast milk. We look at other mammals and their diets. And we look at things like how does the body nourish itself during starvation or fasting by self-cannibalization, because you know, definitely in evolutionary times, people occasionally would be short of food and they would have to, you know, be capable of functioning in that state. They'd have to be able to hunt effectively, you know, while they were starving. So
that's why you recommend periodic short fasts.
Periodic fasts are healthy. So, you know, like I said, we're very influenced by the idea that infections play a big role in health.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody gets infections. Everybody has chronic infections that they carry around with them. And And, you know, most of these infections are content to be kind of parasitic and not do much damage, but when they become more severe, they can cause serious health problems, and in aging, they tend to cause almost all the problems of aging. And so it's good to do things that enhance immunity, and one of them that does that is fasting. So
for how long?
Well, I actually recommend daily intermittent fasting, so doing like a 16-hour fast every day and eating within about an 8-hour window. So that kind of fasting is it's very effective against bacterial and viral infections, and it's not so long as to be stressful and cause problems.
So in other words, if you're talking, you last meal at maybe 6 p.m. and then you don't eat again until 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
In the morning.
I usually eat between noon and 8 p.m. And
oh, so you fast all the way from there?
Yeah.
8 p.m. to noon.
Right. So we eat dinner in the evening, and then I usually don't eat till the afternoon.
Hmm. Boy, that just blows the whole thing of a good breakfast out the window, though, doesn't it? Isn't there a lot of talk and supposedly research that shows that a good breakfast is very key to the whole deal?
Well, a lot of people have trouble skipping breakfast. What helps is if you eat a relatively high-fat diet, then if you think about it, when you fast, your body is sort of consuming itself, and what it's consuming is mainly fat and protein, from your own cells.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if that comprises the bulk of what you eat normally, then you're adapted to eating that, and you don't get the blood sugar problems during a fast that that most people are used to. So actually, if people adjust their macronutrient intake a little bit, eat a little bit less wheat and sugar,
mm-hmm.
and eat some more saturated fats like butter, eat things like eggs, they'll find they can go quite a bit longer without eating, without having any hunger.
Is there any research science behind the idea, Paul Jumet, that when you do this 12 or if you can get up to 15, 16, 17 hours without any kind of food, that actually gets rid of bugs, bad bugs?
Oh, yeah. Yes, there is.
Is there?
So,
huh.
Yeah, it turns out that the main intracellular defense against infections, against bacteria and viruses inside cells, is the same process that cells use when resources are scarce to recycle nutrients. So we have these self-digesting organelles that go around the cell and they find junk proteins, junk organelles that we no longer need, digest them, and recycle the nutrients. And one of the things they look for are bacteria and viruses. And they digest those and recycle their nutrients to feed the cell. So when we're fasting and we're short of nutrition, that machinery turns on. And, you know, they're looking for things to feed the cell, but among the things they're looking for are bacteria and viruses, and they'll
eat them up.
Eat them up, that's right.
Well, we all know, for what it's worth, that when animals get ill, the first thing they do is they just stop eating.
Yeah?
Yeah, dogs will do it, cats will do it.
Right.
I don't know if horses and pigs, I've not lived on a farm this lifetime, but farmers have told me they'll do it.
Yeah, it depends on the illness, but generally against bacterial and viral infections, fasting is usually a good thing to do.
Uh-huh. It's 19 minutes after the hour. Co-author of The Perfect Health Diet, Paul Jumet, Patrick Timpone, 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. So if one just eats, say, like a paleo, just meat, grass-fed meat, when we talk about meat around here, we always think in terms of grass-fed meat or raw dairy products or yard eggs, right? That's just what we do. So, because it's a big difference between regular milk from Kroger or grass-fed raw milk, right? But just say a paleo diet would be protein and vegetables. Where, with your thinking, do the carbs come in here, and why are they important?
Yeah, well, we're sort of high carb by paleo standards.
Yeah.
So we recommend eating about a pound a day of what we call safe starches. And safe starches include rice, and they include potatoes, sweet potatoes, yams, taro, several other foods. And
those are safe starches.
Yeah. So what safe means is that they don't have toxic proteins. So a lot of plant foods, all plants make toxins to try and prevent themselves from getting eaten.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many of them work against insects and germs. And actually, a lot of medicinal herbs that we eat have a lot of antimicrobial functions and are good at reshaping the gut flora in a positive way. You know, a lot of traditional medicines, antibiotics, are obtained from plants. But plants that are eaten by mammals, like grasses, tend to have a lot of toxins that work against mammals. So the grasses in general tend to have a lot of toxins that are effective against humans. You know, they were designed to be effective against cows and horses and so on, but they work against us too.
So that's the argument a lot of people have against grains.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Now, rice is a little unusual in that when you cook white rice, all the toxins get destroyed. So, so rice is the one grain that we think is safe.
White rice, but not brown.
Yeah, we favor white rice over brown. Some of the there are toxins in the bran that survive cooking. So brown rice can be a bit of a problem. And so I think when it comes to grains, we're not looking too much for nutrition from them. There's other sources of nutrition like vegetables and meats. So we would recommend choosing plants that are minimal in toxicity, making that the priority.
And what are we using then these safe starches for if there's not nutrition?
Well, it is nutrition because glucose is a nutrient.
Oh, because we're getting the glucose from the safe starches.
That's right.
The potatoes and the white rice and what are some of the other ones? Taro.
Taro,
you can get
plantains.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of vegetables that are also a little bit sugary. You know, like
carrots.
Sweet potatoes, squashes, carrots,
yeah.
Yes, onions. You know, we tend to favor the starchy ones because they don't have any fructose, and fructose can be problematic. You know, so in our house, we eat a lot of white rice, white potatoes, and taro. We also eat sweet potatoes. We eat a lot of Asian sweet potatoes, which are less sweet, and have a very nice kind of chestnut flavor.
Yeah. Okay, I'm wondering, I kind of like been trying to put a little bit of some of these safe starches in my diet recently after being pretty paleo kind of thing and just feeling the need. I wonder what that is, this idea, if you just do the protein and the vegetables, what is this need that some people have to get some starches, and is this whole ketosis kind of thing?
Yeah. Well,
what is that to talk about that, Paul? I don't understand that.
Yeah. Well, it's very important to get some glucose in your diet.
And you don't get it from meat or vegetables, right?
Right.
Or
that's
eggs.
Right. Yeah.
Uh huh.
So our body uses a fair amount of glucose a day. You probably use maybe 800 calories of glucose a day.
800 calories.
And you can reduce that with ketosis, which your readers may not be familiar with. The body can manufacture from fats these small molecules called ketones that diffuse through the body and can partially replace glucose in the brain. So we recommend ketogenic diets for all kinds of neurological disorders. Very often brain or nerve problems respond to it. It's very good for bacterial infections of the brain. So I ate a ketogenic diet for several years to deal with my brain infection.
Okay, explain to us in broad strokes what a ketogenic diet is.
A ketogenic just means a diet that generates ketones.
Which would be high animal fat? Or coconut oil?
Well, yes. That's the best way, is to get short chain fats from coconut oil, or from, you can buy medium chain triglyceride oils at Amazon, and those are very effective. So one thing we advise, if you want to follow our intermittent fasting program and you get hungry during the 16-hour fast, try taking a tablespoon of MCT oil or coconut oil, and that will often help generate ketones and relieve your hunger.
So a ketogenic diet is getting the glucose from fat.
No, not getting glucose. It's getting ketones, which can partially substitute for glucose.
Oh, if you're not eating carbs.
Right.
Okay.
So they don't completely replace your need for glucose. You still need glucose to make all kinds of molecules in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the symptoms that people get if they don't eat enough glucose, they can get dry eyes, they can get constipation, they can get low energy, they can get slow healing scratch wounds, because all of those functions, creating mucus, creating tears, saliva, requires sugar. And when the body is trying to conserve glucose because it's scarce, it shuts down mucus production.
Okay.
And you tend to dry out.
Oh, that makes sense. So then, that's a different sugar, Paul Jeanmatte, than fruit.
Yeah. Well, fruit.
And fructose, of course.
Right.
Right.
So fruit sugars digest to usually, it varies with the fruit, but usually around half glucose, half fructose. And, fructose, it's treated by the body like a toxin. It gets shunted to the liver and disposed of there, unlike glucose, which circulates through the body and nourishes cells.
Fructose is treated like a toxin.
That's right, yeah.
I thought fruits were, like, really, really good for us.
Well, fruits are generally good for you.
But they're more cleansing, though.
Yeah. Huh. Well, they have various beneficial things in them. And fructose isn't that harmful if the quantities are small, and the quantities usually are in fruit. So a typical fruit might have 200 calories per pound, and only 100 of those are fructose. If you compare those to, not many people eat more than a pound of fruit a day. If you compare that to the amount of fructose in say, a can of Coca-Cola, and think about how much soda people drink, you can easily see that the dose is going to be vastly larger.
What did you say about 800 calories of glucose a day?
That's right.
That's what we need. So, what does that turn out to with these safe starches? What would you have to eat every day?
Well, we recommend eating a little bit less than what you need and making a little bit from protein. So we would recommend eating more like 400 to 600 calories a day.
Of safe starches.
Yeah, and
how many do you get, say, out of an average sweet potato?
Yeah, well, that works out to about a pound of our safe starches a day. So
a pound just in dry weight?
No, in cooked weight. So, for instance, cooked white rice has about 600 calories per pound, because most of the weight is water.
Per pound, that's a lot of rice.
Yeah, so
no wonder, I guess, Orientals can live off this white rice, huh?
It's actually a much smaller part of their diet than
people think. But they do eat it every meal, don't they?
So I think it's a good idea to eat some safe starches with every meal.
Really?
It doesn't have to be a lot, but visually, in terms of weight, it should probably be a fair fraction of your meal.
How would you do that? Would they cook white rice every meal?
Well, we usually have a rice cooker. We'll cook up some rice once every 2 or 3 days, and then we just keep it in the refrigerator and microwave it when we...
Microwave? I can't believe you said this on this program, microwave.
Just kidding.
Do you really nuke it?
Yeah, that's right.
Man, I can't believe that.
We do reheat.
That's not very good for your food, Paul Jeanmatte,
Well,
of course, you're an astrophysicist, I guess, you don't... You probably think these... I'm just kidding. You can do whatever you want with your food. 29 minutes after the hour, Paul Jeanmatte, Xu Qing is his wife, who's a molecular biologist lady, and she also studied reported pretty highly educated gal, right? Cancer research, Beth Israel, Harvard Medical. How long did you all work on this book, Paul DeMeth, This Perfect Health Diet?
Well, 5 years, so...
My goodness.
Yep.
So, a lot of research there. Okay, stay right there, and if you have a question about this, I think it's fascinating. Paul DeMeth, Perfect Health Diet, is perfecthealthdiet.com, and my name is Patrick Timpone. If you have puttin', that's not a word, if you have put too much weight on the old middle section there, I've got an idea for you. HCG. Have you heard about that? HCG. Human gonotropin kind of thing is, became very popular the last three to five years. People do these shots, these actual injections of HCG. You can go to a local doctor wherever you live and probably pay $1,500 to $2,000 for an HCG program. And it's very effective. It will. You can lose 15, 20 pounds in 45 days. Safe, very effective, as they say. Dr. Simeones in Italy came up with this whole thing. It really tricks your body into believing that it's pregnant, and it really will eat away at this really bad brown fat. And people have done it, and boy, it'll stay off too. Now, when you're on the diet, so let me tell you, on our, the one that we promote is through Living Well Today International. Friends of ours, Michael Payne in Virginia, and you click on the ad there on One Radio Network, and you work through there, and you can give them a call or sign up for the HCG, but it's homeopathic, which we feel is safer, but it's just as effective. And they've worked it out. They call it revolutionary because you can do 1,000 calories, and it's meat and vegetables, and I think one breadstick, so you get a little bit of that carb there. And that's it. But it's pretty easy because your body, what I hear, I've never done it, I'm working on gaining weight, your body is just not as hungry. And I know ladies over the years that did it on the 500 calories, and they said it was easy peasy. And part of this diet is you do a shake every day that you get from in this program. But check this out. You could lose 15, 20 pounds between now and Christmas. That'd be cool, right? Why not? New Year's Eve, man, you'll be slinky. It's the HCG Revolutionary Homeopathic Weight Loss Diet right on the front page of One Radio Network. Scroll down. You'll see the gal there in the little blue bikini or whatever that is. Or look into the store of One Radio Network and click on the HCG thing and you're good to go.
When the only economic certainty is uncertainty, where do smart investors park their capital? Diversification is critical in most economic times and even more essential during uncertain ones. Adding physical wealth as an asset class to your portfolio provides tremendous protection against volatility in paper currencies. Call usgoldcoins.com today at 1-800-878-2646. usgoldcoins.com will be happy to provide you with the best quality gold and silver United States coins. usgoldcoins.com, 1-800-878-2646.
Hi, Patrick Timpone with the formulator of this wonderful colostrum we sell on One Radio Network, Dr. Anthony Kleinsmith. Anti-aging, everybody wants to stay younger. Why does it work?
Oh, gosh, you have all of those natural growth factors that are found there, and they've been shown through a lot of research to actually bring you into a younger, more youthful state. And the fun thing about our colostrum through Sir Thrival is that it's all natural.
There's nothing else added. And you all get this at what time during the whole process of the cows giving birth?
From 0 to 6 to 8 hours after birth. Remember, colostrum is only produced one time, 4 to 6 weeks prior to birth. We take it. We make sure that the calf gets their fill. We take the remainder.
And it comes in a yummy powder that's just delicious. You can put in the kids' smoothies. The immune system, it's just a great thing. Colostrum, right on the front page. You'll see it on the Sir Thrival website from OneRadioNetwork.com. Well, if you haven't tried this product, you're really missing out. We love it. It's a really a nice food. You know, I'll just maybe have 2-3 tablespoons a day sometimes or just go off and on. And I recommend the best way that you can do this is get the kilo. It's 2.2, and ounce for ounce, it's the most cost-effective way to get this product. I am just finishing up my kilo, and I purchased it. I write the date on there. I think it was July, late July. So that's how long it lasts for me, and I eat a lot of it. It doesn't weigh very much, so that can's going to go a long way, and that's colostrum from SurThrival.
We are listener-supported, One Radio Network. Talk to Patrick now, 888-663-6386, or email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
We're talking about the perfect health diet with Paul Jammet, PhD. He's an astrophysicist, but you can tell he's got a good mind for this research because he and his wife, Shou Qing, molecular biologist and cancer researcher with Harvard, took about 5 years to put this together. So you all just kind of dug in and did the research to figure this out, and you're right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's pretty cool.
Our focus the first few years was at healing ourselves.
Yeah.
So we weren't really intending to write a book at that point. Then we started writing some things up for family and friends, and a lot of our, we're sort of middle-aged. A lot of our aunts and uncles, the earlier generation, were starting to have cancer and heart disease and those kinds of things. So, we started thinking about those too. And every time you write something, you realize, I don't know as much as I thought I did. I need to do more research. So it kept growing, and eventually we felt like we had learned enough that we could really help a lot of people, and so we put it together in a book.
And you guys are feeling good, you two.
Yep, we're feeling great.
Yeah. I wonder, let's talk about this limit of the protein. So your research shows that as good as protein is, and when we talk about protein, once again, we like to support grass-fed animal products. Again, I need to say that. It's a big difference between cows that are eating corn and have growth hormones. But when you talk about limiting it, what are some of the downsides of having too much protein, and what would you consider the good limits for, say, somebody maybe 150 pounds?
Yeah, well, protein, so not all nutrients are safe in unlimited quantities. often they're nutritious up to a point, and then they become toxic, and protein is one of those.
Huh. How does it become toxic?
Well, protein, amino acids all contain nitrogen, and when you metabolize them or dispose of them, you release the nitrogen, which forms ammonia. And ammonia is toxic, so we use it for cleaning products because it's very good at killing bacteria and other cells.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wouldn't drink ammonia, and you don't want to take in huge quantities of protein either. So good levels of protein are usually between 200 calories to 600 calories a day.
200 to 600 calories.
So that usually a good guideline is about half a pound to a pound of meat a day, or meat equivalents like eggs.
Well, that's a lot.
Yeah,
seems like a lot to me, but
right.
I'm a small kid.
Well, I eat about half a pound a day. I tend to stay on the low side.
And how much do you weigh?
I weigh 175.
So a half a pound a day for 175. So somebody 125, could they do a half a pound a day with SAFE?
Yeah, a half a pound is pretty good. So,
that's it throughout the whole day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then how would you add eggs into the mix there from a scientific point of view then, if you're going to do some eggs?
Well, what I personally do, because, I eat enough meat, to get my half pound of protein from that. So I usually, when I eat eggs, I usually just eat the yolks, not the whites. The yolks have most of the nutrition. But one thing we do, probably once a week is we have sort of homemade sushi, which is, most of it is just leftovers, but we have seaweed and some rice, and we have various leftover foods, and we have some eggs, avocado, things like that, and we just slice them up, and everybody, you know, rolls their own or folds their own in a piece of seaweed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we make omelets and have eggs for breakfast sometimes when we're not fasting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, eggs are nutritionally very similar to many meats, and they can substitute for meat.
Why do you think that so many people are malnourished?
Well, it's very easy to be malnourished, and when we looked into micronutrient status, what we found is that minerals are the big problem for most people.
Yeah.
And mineral deficiencies are very widespread. And the biggest reason is the water treatment. So when you get your drinking water, all the minerals have been removed, and water has always been the biggest source of minerals of many minerals in the diet.
Spring water. People do kind of grew up drinking spring water, right?
Right. Natural water sources are full of dissolved minerals, and you know, so things like magnesium, calcium, sulfur, a whole bunch of others are very abundant in natural water sources, but they're entirely missing from our drinking water.
Yeah.
And there's also an issue with agriculture, and, you know, of course, all of our food is produced agriculturally. If you keep growing the same plants on the same crop of land, they're going to deplete the minerals, and the plants will be depleted of minerals. If they're not restored in fertilizer, and that's not always the case, then the minerals can be depleted in the foods we eat. And then, you know, if people don't eat nourishing foods, if they're eating things like sugar and, you know, bread, some foods have anti-nutrients. A lot of the cereal grains have anti-nutrients like phytase that that can inhibit mineral absorption. You know, but most people just eat a lot of nutrient-poor diets with, you know, foods that have a lot of calories but not very many nutrients. They don't exercise, so they're not necessarily eating a lot of calories. And, you know, so all of those factors conspire to, you know, make people a little bit malnourished, especially in the minerals.
Yeah, I'm aware we're getting this. Can you hear that interference?
A little bit. There's a little...
it's not good here. I wonder, can you, would you dial me right back?
Sure.
Yeah, let me disconnect.
All right.
And then if it could be our line here, could be his. If the new connection gets it, we'll try him on another machine. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Tomorrow we have Open Phone Friday. You back, Paul?
Yes.
Okay, if we keep getting that, I'm going to try you back on another line. Mm-hmm. Can I try you back on another line?
Yep. Yeah.
Because this is not good. Let me do this here, and then we'll dial him right back. I'm talking to Al Carter. He's the world's foremost authority on rebound exercise. Al, you've been rebounding for a long time. How old are you?
Actually, I'm 69 years old, going on 40.
On 40?
Huh.
And why is rebounding so good for you? I mean, it feels good. It's fun. What else?
It exercises every cell in the body. It's known as a cellular exercise.
So the cells go squishy, squishy, and all the bad stuff goes out, and you can build muscles when you rebound?
Yes. Every muscle in the body receives stimulation.
You mean like your calves and your stomach and everything? You can actually do that?
The biceps, the triceps, and even the sphincter muscles of the body, they're all strengthened.
And you know, when you strengthen those, that decreases the aging possibility. But that's another story. Order yourself a rebounder right now. Front page, look at the display for the rebounders on OneRadioNetwork.com. Go through PayPal, very secure. Don't have to be a PayPal member. Any credit card, ship it via UPS in 3 days or so. It's all yours. Right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. All righty, it's 10:44. Paul, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. We'll see if this is not as clear as line, but we'll see if we don't get all that clunky stuff going here. Somebody, a listener, wants to know if basmati rice, which is a white rice, falls into a category that you believe. Are you familiar with basmati rice?
Yeah, I'm not intimately familiar with all the differences in the different grades of rice, but we do think basmati rice is a healthy food to eat. So some of the different strains of rices have slightly different glycemic indexes, but in general, we recommend rice as part of a meal, you know, where you're eating it with meat, vegetables, with usually a sauce made of fats and acids. Like lemon juice or vinegar, along with an oil. And usually the combination of those things makes the glycemic index not really matter. And there's also, some kinds of rice that have more toxins than some others, but white rice generally is low toxin in all the strains. So,
and what is it about the brown rice that's a problem, as you say?
Well, there's a few toxins in the brown rice, and a few people are particularly sensitive to them. They're not very serious toxins, you know. So, in general, if you don't notice anything, you know, we say brown rice is acceptable. It's an okay food, but white rice is probably better, and that's what we eat. So that's what we recommend, you know. But if you want to eat brown rice, that's okay. Brown rice has a few toxins. It has a few more nutrients. I don't think the extra nutrients are that important. It also has some anti-nutrients. So it's a, you know, you could make a case for brown rice, but I favor white rice.
Mm-hmm. What about legumes, beans, peanuts, those kinds of things? What does your research show that their nutritional benefits?
All right. Well, a few kinds of legumes, like soy and peanuts, seem to be pretty toxic. So I would absolutely exclude those.
Soy and peanuts.
Yeah. And in general, the high-calorie legumes, like any kind of beans, have a lot of toxins when they're uncooked. And most of the toxins are destroyed in cooking, but it can take quite a while to eliminate them. So to really have non-toxic beans, what you should do is soak them overnight and thoroughly cook them. And, you know, most people don't do that. Most commercial foods don't do that. You know, they whiz the food through the factory really quickly. So, I personally would recommend avoiding beans generally, and you know, unless you're preparing them yourself, you know. So some traditional foods, like Indian foods, they would make all these bean dishes and they'd cook them for 24 hours or so on, and you know, so those are probably safe. I think in general, if you tend toward the low carb side of dieting, you can probably get by pretty well with things like potatoes and taro and rice.
Mm-hmm. And what is it then in the legumes that you say are toxic?
Well, legumes—they're basically in a similar situation to the grains.
Mm-hmm.
They grow a lot in open grasslands. They tend to get fed on by herbivorous mammals, and they develop toxins which hinder digestion in mammals, so that when their seeds get eaten, the seeds will pass through the digestive tract and go out whole and be able to start new plants.
It's an evolutionary thing.
That's right, yeah. So, the plant's interest was in making sure their seeds would survive digestion and come out with fertilizer. You know, so they sort of co-evolved with herbivorous mammals. But the thing is, you know, when they make these bioactive proteins that are good at interacting with mammalian cells and shutting down digestion, then, you know, those can affect lots of cells, not just the digestive cells. And actually, people have died, actually, from eating uncooked beans. And, you know, rats can easily be killed by eating uncooked beans. So it's a, you know, cooking does generally make them pretty safe if they're well cooked. But I guess I've had enough health problems in my life. I'm in the better safe than sorry crowd.
And then why do white rice, why don't they have these characteristics?
They do have a few of them, but it happens that the ones in white rice are very quickly destroyed in cooking.
I see.
You know, just an ordinary exposure, even for a very short period, to boiling water eliminates the toxin.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think all this gluten intolerance has come from?
Well, that's a good question. You know, there's a lot of debate whether the problem has increased in recent decades. So, you know, there have been changes in the nature of wheat due to breeding for dwarf strains that grow faster. But I think, you know, the gluten problem has probably been around for a very long time. And the other possibility is that chronic infections that are more common now make gluten intolerance worse. And that's also quite likely. You know, but I think it's also possible that, you know, there were a lot of undiagnosed wheat problems going on for a long time.
Here's an email, Scott from Georgia. What about occasional 24-hour fast? What is the max time? Maybe 36 hours. Homemade fermented foods are great, right? Carrots, sauerkraut, kefir. What about homemade sourdough rye bread? Some bunch of questions there. Would you go up to 36 hours sometimes?
Yeah, I think it's fine. You know, basically, the healthier you are, the longer you can tolerate fasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what I would suggest is the longer you make your fast, the more you should include certain foods that ease the stress of the fast. And I would particularly recommend vegetables, including fermented vegetables. I would recommend coconut oil or MCT oil to help generate ketones.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, basically vegetables for fiber. I sometimes include berries. So, you know, a typical salad, you know, might be good, spinach, maybe some cranberries or other vegetables with like an MCT oil and vinegar dressing. You know, that might be a good food. Very few calories in that, but it will help reduce the stress of the fast, and it won't hinder the health benefits of the fast. So you can eat little things like that while you're fasting, and the longer your fast goes, the more I would include things like that.
So what are you not... So you're saying that the fasting effects are... They stop when you eat what? When you eat glucose?
Well,
no, glucose
yeah,
or protein?
Yeah, glucose and protein... carbs and protein are the ones that... strongly interrupt a fast.
I see. So you would eat meats or eggs or proteins or
yeah,
glucose.
I would avoid protein. I would. The thing that will most maintain the benefits of a fast are the short chain fats, like in coconut oil or MCT oil.
I thought those are medium chain.
We call them short, but technically they're
medium.
Called
yeah.
medium chain.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Right. Interesting. Let's go back a second. Scientifically, have you found supplemental minerals of some source that you believe scientifically are absorbed by the body? Because you're talking about getting the minerals from spring water, and who does that anymore?
Yeah.
I mean, you can get bottled spring water these days from some places. In Glass, Mountain Valley is one. And they have it, but most folks are taking their drinking water out of the sink after they reverse osmosis, which takes all the minerals out.
Right, yep. Yeah, so we actually do recommend mineral supplementation. And
how do we know which ones are going to be absorbed in the body?
Well, there is some data on that. So there are different You can get most minerals in different forms. So, for instance, magnesium, which is one of the most important to supplement, the magnesium oxide form is not absorbed very well.
But glycinate is, right?
Yeah. Any kind of chelated form is usually absorbed pretty well. I actually, because I've recently figured out that it's important to get sulfur too, I've started getting magnesium from Epsom salts. And if you get the Epsom salts that say they're okay for use, for internal use as a laxative, put like half a teaspoon in a cup of water once a day and drink that. That's a good source of magnesium and sulfate, which is important.
MSM is a good source of sulfur as well. Do you know MSM?
Yeah, it's. I don't personally do that. I think the Epsom salts work great. MSM is validated in some studies.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever found something that you believe, from a scientific point of view, that are total all the minerals that work, rather than just isolate it like magnesium or sulfur?
Yeah, you mean like a multi-mineral supplement or food? A lot of the multi-mineral or multivitamin supplements, we do recommend taking a multivitamin or a multi-mineral each day. I can't say that I've found anyone where I think the formulation is perfect. We also recommend eating foods like liver at least once a week, which has a pretty high mineral content. And things like seaweed, sea vegetables, shellfish, are also a great source of minerals, and usually a somewhat different set of minerals than liver. So definitely some foods are very valuable. For liver, it's very good to get that from grass-fed animals.
You want to do that, yeah.
Right.
Paul excuse me, before you go, I wanted to get a quick question in. Our producer mentioned that in your book, which he's sending me, I haven't seen it yet, that you write about body temperature. Can you quickly give us a little thing about that, what you've learned from that?
Body temperature, it can be an important indicator of health. A lot of people have hypothyroidism, which reduces body temperature. Body temperature can also be adjusted as part of immune function because, some pathogens do worse. That's why fevers are curative for instance, viral infections.
So some infections will lower the body temperature?
Yeah, first of all, some infections do infect the thyroid, or their toxins affect thyroid function. And so they induce hypothyroidism. So a lot of cases of hypothyroidism are really infectious in origin. Also, some like fungal infections tend to benefit from a high body temperature. So, there's some complexities related to body temperature, but definitely I would say hypothyroidism, may be one of the leading health problems.
Yeah, it's big. Yeah.
In modern times. And there are a lot of things you can do to nutritionally to improve it. There are critical nutrients for the thyroid, like selenium, iodine, although you have to be cautious with iodine, and increase dose very slowly.
Yeah, and then work on detoxifying the thyroid. We did a whole show on our website. People can find that, Wilson's Temperature Syndrome. It's all about the thyroid and temperature. Pretty fascinating the way they're going about it. And as you know, the thyroid is a very tricky business, boy, to really figure it out, but it can be done. Well, Paul Jamet, thanks so much for hanging out with us and your work with your wife on your book, The Perfect Health Diet, and it's perfecthealthdiet.com, right?
Yep, that's right. So thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye. Paul Jamet, Perfect Health Diet. So there's another piece of the puzzle for you as you look for your perfect health diet. Okay, you little pumpkin pies. Pumpkin, that's probably a safe starch. Now I have to look in the list. I love you guys very much. It's an honor to be here with you every day on OneRadioNetwork.com. We'll trip the Light Fandango and do some Open Phone Friday, which would be tomorrow, because that is Friday. I figured that by myself. Patrick Timpone, take care of yourself. See you tomorrow morning.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.